It's time for justice. Welcome to the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show, heard every Wednesday from 12:30 to 1 p.m. on 97.3 FM WRIR. I'm your host, Marty Wigbray.
Ain't gonna let nobody turn me around, turn me around, turn me around.
This show is written and produced by Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. We give free, civil, non-criminal legal aid to low-income people in Richmond, Petersburg, Charlottesville, and surrounding cities and counties. Coming up on this week's show...
After that, just nothing, until it turns out. At some point, the bank that made her the loan dredged up this ancient account, whether accurately or inaccurately, and sold it to a collection outfit in Ohio.
Henry Woodward, General Counsel for the Legal Aid Society of Roanoke Valley, tells strange but true tales about zombie debts that haunt the living from beyond the grave. And in a follow-up from last week's interview about elder law and powers of attorney, we answer this week's question about the powers and duties of someone who holds a power of attorney for another. All that and more coming up. Stay with us. The show is supported in part by a grant from the Virginia Law Foundation. This show, number 31, is the sole responsibility of Central Virginia Legal Aid Society and gives only general legal information. If you have a legal problem and need specific legal advice about your situation, contact an attorney. If you can't afford an attorney, we'll tell you later in the show how to get free legal advice or representation in a civil case. The Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show is heard every Wednesday at 12:30 on WRIR, 97.3 FM, Richmond Independent Radio, and is made possible by community radio volunteers at WRIR. And now, this week's news you can use. The Virginia Interfaith Center for Public Policy has launched a billboard campaign that seeks to warn consumers about car title loans. The faith-based advocacy group is spending about $2,200 to display its message for 4 weeks on two electronic billboards in the Richmond area. The center's 22 faith-based groups say car title loans, where a borrower's vehicle is used to guarantee a loan, are a form of predatory lending that comes with high interest rates. Currently, these loans are not regulated in Virginia. The billboards are on Interstate 95 near Bells Road and on Mechanicsville Turnpike entering Richmond. They say, "Hooked by a car title loan?" and contain an illustration of a car being towed away and the toll-free car title loan hotline, 1-866-830-4501. The center seeks legislation at the General Assembly that would regulate car title lenders under the Virginia Consumer Finance Act, which already governs loans up to $2,500 and caps the annual interest rate at 36%. In other news, 47 other states spend more per person on Medicaid than Virginia, but that has not spared the program from $418 million in proposed budget cuts. Medicaid provides health care to the low-income aged, blind, and disabled, pregnant women, children, and some of the children's caretaker relatives. If the cuts are enacted, some medical services will have caps to limit enrollment growth, and reimbursements to health care providers will be frozen or even reduced. To avoid even deeper cuts in Medicaid, a 30-cent per pack increase in the cigarette tax is proposed. The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention estimate that cigarette smoking causes over $400 million per year in Virginia Medicaid expenses. However, Virginia's current cigarette tax raises only $167 million per year to cover these costs. That leaves a shortfall of $233 million per year. The proposed cigarette tax increase would raise an additional $148 million for Medicaid, which still would not fully cover smoking costs, but would reduce the shortfall to $85 million. With this week's News You Can Use, this is your host, Marty Wegbright.
Ain't gonna let nobody turn me around, turn me around, turn me around.
You're listening to the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show on WRIR 97.3 FM, Richmond Independent Radio.
This week's legal term of the week is creditor's bill in equity. After a creditor gets a judgment against you, a creditor's bill in equity is a second and separate lawsuit filed in circuit court. The lawsuit asks for an order to sell your real property, like your house or land, to pay a creditor who has a judgment against you. As with the first lawsuit, the creditor must file the lawsuit, serve the court papers on you, and get an order for the sale. If there is a mortgage on your house or land, and the court issues an order for the sale, the mortgage is paid first from the sale proceeds. Due to this reason, a creditor's bill in equity seldom is used. For the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show, I'm Diane Dussault, and that's this week's Legal Term of the Week.
It's time for the weekly question and answer session. We're here in the studio with this week's questioner. Tell us your name and where you're from.
Dalla of Richmond.
Thank you for being on the show. What question do you have for us this week?
Yes, I would like to know, what is the duty of the power of attorney?
Excellent question, and in fact, a topic that we covered on last week's show. A power of attorney is simply someone who acts as someone else's agent. When you sign a power of attorney, you're appointing that person to act as your agent. That agent is called an attorney in fact, or sometimes simply referred to as a power of attorney. And the attorney in fact, or the power of attorney, has to act on behalf of the person who signed the power of attorney. We'll call that person the principal. When the attorney in fact, or the agent, signs something, it's the same as if the principal had signed something. So the attorney in fact can sign checks, can sign other financial documents, leases, contracts, pretty much anything, as long as the attorney in fact signs in a manner that makes it clear that the attorney in fact is acting as power of attorney. So you might sign it Della as power of attorney for so-and-so, or you might sign it so-and-so by and through power of attorney Della. In any event, you sign it in a manner that makes it clear that you're signing as the power of attorney, and you're not signing it on your own behalf. And that means that you, as the attorney, in fact, or the agent, are not legally responsible for, like, paying that debt or fulfilling that contract or anything of that nature. Now, the attorney, in fact, has to act on behalf of the principal in a reasonable manner and transact their business in a reasonable fashion. But the attorney, in fact, has a lot of leeway, a lot of freedom of choice in how to go about doing that. Now, obviously, the attorney, in fact, can't just steal the money or, you know, use it in an irresponsible manner. But as long as the attorney, in fact, is acting in a reasonable, responsible manner, that's the whole purpose of having a power of attorney, is to have somebody transact your business for you. Now, are you someone's power of attorney, or are you trying to give somebody else a power of attorney to act for you?
No, I'm not a power attorney of anyone. I help someone out, and she has a power of attorney, and I don't think they are doing their job, and I was just trying to find out their duties.
Well, that happens a lot, where a person who holds a power of attorney is really not behaving properly. And I guess this thing to do in that situation is talk to the principal, the person who signed the power of attorney, and make them aware of what the agent is doing, and ask the principal, is this how you want the agent to act? And if so, that's fine. And if not, then the principal may want to revoke or get rid of that power of attorney, and that's certainly something that legally can do if the person is income and resource eligible.
Okay, thank you. That was good advice.
Thank you so much for being on the show.
Turn me around. Ain't gonna let no one turn me around.
We're back with the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show on WRIR 97.3 FM, Richmond Independent Radio. And we're here at the annual statewide Legal Aid Conference. We're talking with Henry Woodward, who is the director of the Legal Aid Society of Roanoke Valley. And we will be talking about debt buyers and zombie debt. Welcome to the show, Henry.
Thanks, Marty. Pleasure to be with you.
Nice to have you here. The first question is to define our terms. What do we mean by zombie debt?
Well, I hope it says something if I explain that zombie debt is ancient debt that comes back from the grave to haunt the living.
That's a good definition. Where do these debts come from? What specifically has happened to them in the past that makes them dead, and then I guess what reanimates them?
I can give you a perfect example, Marty, of a case that came to me shortly ago. We were referred a disabled retired woman from Florida who had been garnished in her bank account down in Florida. And it came to us because, strangely enough, she'd been sued in Roanoke, where I practice law. As we got into it, it appeared that the debt originated from a car loan made to her 22 years ago in Fairfax, Virginia, when she lived there. She had paid that loan down for 4 years and moved to Florida, where she'd been told by the bank that they didn't want to administer the loan down there. She should turn the car back in, and she did that. And she never heard another peep out of them. She got no notice that the car had been sold or no advice that she still owed him anything after that. And so long ago, she forgot about it, of course. After that, just nothing, until it turns out, at some point, the bank that made her the loan dredged up this ancient account, whether accurately or inaccurately, and sold it to a collection outfit in Ohio. Again, this is typical of how this debt sort of stuff transfers, but it's quite an exotic, far-flung geographic story, isn't it?
Well, it certainly is. And isn't there some sort of law in Virginia and other states that limits the time within which a lawsuit like that would have to be filed?
Of course there is. Every state has statutes of limitations, which is the technical word for time limits on bringing suits that can be hopeful of success. And that was the case here, too. But boy, what a trip to get there. In this case, the loan company and the collection agency in Ohio found a Roanoke lawyer, not clear why, but found a Roanoke lawyer who was willing to bring suit on this and a number of other of their loans in Roanoke, even though my disabled lady had never been to Roanoke in her life, and served the papers somehow in Florida, but in such a way that they never got to her. So she knew nothing about any of this revival of this ancient loan, which she thought had been paid off, until the bank account got hit. It's truly a scary and remarkable story, but it's exactly how zombie debt reaches from the grave.
That is scary and remarkable. So in other words, even though there's a limitation period beyond which you can't sue, you can sue anyway?
That's what happens. Now, the law generally permits suits on old debts if the person being sued doesn't object. There are some limits on that, though, and one of those limits is that if the debt has been acquired by a collection agency after the debt was in default, then there are some limits imposed by federal law on bringing suit or threatening suit on that debt, and that's pretty much what happened here.
So if you do get sued by a zombie debt collector, I guess clearly you would advise our listeners, don't ignore it. Pay attention. Go to court.
Absolutely, and go to court, and before you say anything about whether you owe the debt or not, find out what debt they're talking about and how old it is, because there are just many obstacles to fair treatment of debtors or alleged debtors in the case of pursuit of zombie debt.
I see. And is there a particular magic language or words that you ought to use before the judge if you go to court on a zombie debt case?
As a lawyer, I routinely ask for a bill of particulars in Virginia. That is an order from the court that the the debt collector produce the papers and the information about where this debt originated and when it went into default, if it did. With that information, you sort of know what to say next. But the tricky part arises even before that, Marty. And let me just go through some of the problems that zombie debt poses for the people who are its victims. The initial problem, illustrated well by my client, is that often these things have happened so long ago that the original contracts or debt papers cannot be produced, on the one hand, by the collection agency, and on the other hand, if there is any defense to be made by the debtor or the alleged debtor, it all happened so long ago that they have no records or no way to prove payment.
And isn't that the point of a statute of limitations, to make sure that things are brought while they're fresh?
Exactly right. A second problem that commonly applies, and is again illustrated here, is that when you sue somebody on a debt that's that old, it's very hard to find them. People do move around, and it's no surprise that they had trouble getting the papers to this woman's hands before the judgment was entered. Because it's routinely difficult to serve people 22 years after they furnished their address. And that's a very common aspect of zombie debt. The additional problems are even more technical. That is, the complications imposed by assignment of debt from one original creditor to a succession of later buyers. That's a very common practice these days in the finance industry.
And that's legal? In other words, a debt that is that old can nonetheless be sold from company to company to company, essentially forever?
It would be hard to say that it's always legal, but there's nothing strange about the notion of selling an existing debt. An existing debt can be sold. It's properly sold in Virginia by actually transferring the paper which reflects the debt, that is the original contract or note, with a written assignment by the original creditor to another person. And it can be sold many times down the road. It can be sold from one person to another person to another person. At some point, however, it does pass the statute of limitations for collection. And after it has been in default, then a later collection agency taking that debt has to be very careful that they have a valid debt to pursue, or they run into serious trouble with federal law.
Well, now, Henry, what would you advise people if they are contacted by a debt collector trying to collect a zombie debt? Let's say they get a letter, or let's say they get a phone call. What should they do?
If it is simply a phone call, then it is possible to ask the collector for more information in hopes of finding out what's going on. You know, one of the sorry things about this is that a person who did owe a debt some years back is not likely to recognize the person calling, because it's different from anybody they ever dealt with. And so it's very hard sometimes to figure out exactly what kind of debt this could be. That's an initial problem. So extracting as much information as you can from the collector is very useful. If it is only a phone call problem, then it is possible to ask in writing that they never contact you again and see what happens, and often that will work. That's the last you hear. However, some zombie debt holders do go the second step, and one needs to say something about the finance industry to understand why that works.
Well, tell us, what is it about the finance industry that makes them do this?
This is a fairly recent phenomenon, Marty. It appears that in this age of ingenuity, there has arisen a whole new sub-industry serving the finance industry. Those people who have made loans in the past, wondering what to do with the large numbers of account documents buried in the basement somewhere about ancient debts that either were not paid way back when, or nobody can remember what the status was, can be sold off in large batches. And there are people who now buy those debts by the hundreds or the thousands.
And how much are they paying for these debts? Surely not the face value.
Well, surely not. They're paying usually just pennies on the dollar for these big batches of debts. What's rather ironic is that they have the right, however, to sue for the full amount owed on the debt, regardless of whether there's any prospect of collecting it or not. And as you can appreciate, after long years have passed, the chances of both finding the person and of collecting from them are pretty remote. But they don't have to collect on many of them to make out quite nicely, thank you, if they've only paid pennies on the dollar to get the debt in the first place.
So in other words, if they've paid pennies on the dollar, let's say 2 cents on the dollar, and if they can recover, let's say, one out of 40, they're going to make money.
They could make a considerable amount of money that way. That's right.
Now, I've heard it said that if you get a call from a zombie debt collector and the account's clearly not yours, that maybe it was identity theft, or possibly it was a debt that you discharged in bankruptcy years ago, assuming you can even figure that out, that possibly if this went over interstate phone lines, they've committed wire fraud. Is that a remedy?
Well, that could be, but it's more practically useful to most people probably to exercise their remedies under the Federal Fair Debt Collection Practices Act. That forbids collection of debts which really don't exist or which could not be collected on because of the statute of limitations. You'd probably need a lawyer to do that, but it does provide an effective remedy against harassment by zombie debt collectors.
Okay, and what would those remedies be if you did take a case to court, whether you contacted a private attorney or you got legal aid to assist you with that?
The federal law that authorizes suit in those circumstances permits recovery of your actual loss, whatever that was. And in many cases like this, actual loss is hard to describe. But it also permits recovery of a statutory damage penalty of up to $1,000 for the acts being done in the first place, and your attorney's fees and costs of having brought the suit. It's not a fortune, but it's a useful deterrent to the kind of conduct that zombie debt collectors traditionally take part in.
And that's very useful. Henry, we have been talking with Henry Woodward, the director of the Legal Aid Society of Roanoke Valley, about zombie debt.
The other thing to say about this, Marty, is particularly important in this age of economic difficulty that the country finds itself in. If we're looking for examples of frantic economic activity which reflect no real value being created, exchanged, or taking place, zombie debt is a perfect example. It's an example of people making money off of something that either doesn't exist or cannot legally be made money off of, and harms everyone and the society at large by the manner in which it's conducted. And I think is typical of an unfortunately large segment of the financial industry in this country.
And hopefully we will be seeing that change very soon. Henry, thank you for being on the show. We have been talking with Henry Woodward at the Legal Aid Society of Roanoke Valley, and this is the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show. Welcome back to the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show on WRIR 97.3 FM, Richmond Independent Radio.
This week's top three tips are about effective consumer complaints. The first tip is to make your complaint as soon as you can. The faster you complain, the better your chances are to solve the problem. You should try to complain in person. If you must complain over the phone, take written notes. The second tip is that if your problem isn't solved in a few days, complain by writing a letter and be specific. Also, put the business name and address in your letter. Sign it and date it, and make and save a copy. The third tip is that if your written complaint isn't solved in a few weeks, get outside help.
You can contact the Office of Consumer Affairs at 786-2042 or toll free at 1-800-552-9963. For the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show, I'm Michelle King. And for this week, that's our top three tips.
That's all for this week's Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show. This show is heard every Wednesday from 12:30 to 1 p.m. The show is the sole responsibility of Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. To see if you can get free civil legal aid, call during intake hours. These are Monday through Thursday, 9 a.m. to 11:30 a.m. and 1 p.m. to 2:30 p.m. The phone number is 200-6046 for intake, 648-1012 for the main number, and 1-800-868-1012 to call toll-free. Also, if you have a question you would like answered or any comments on the show, you can email them to marty@cvlas.org. Please include your name and phone number. You also can leave that same information before 8 a.m. or after 6 p.m. by calling 200-6045. This show provides only general legal information. If you have a legal problem and need specific legal advice about your situation, contact an attorney. If you can't afford one, call Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. The federal government's failure to enact comprehensive immigration reform has had severe negative impacts, as the misguided efforts of state and local officials to fix the problem create both fear among immigrants and conditions that abuse and exploit them. Join us next week for the first of a two-part presentation by Tim Freilich at the Immigrant Advocacy Program on how immigrants are treated and mistreated under current law. That's Law for the Rest of Us next week on the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show. I'm Marty Winkler.